Psalm 52, the introduction says, to the chief musician, Maschal, a song of instruction, a psalm of David, when Doeg, now, you know you're in trouble when you're dealing with a guy named Doeg. I think they put the E in there just to be pleasant, I think. When Dog, the Edomite, came and told Saul and said unto him, David is come to the house of Ahimelech. Now, this is a song. Isn't it interesting? This was, you know, David is about 20 years old, tops. He has 600 men in his army. Imagine a 20-year-old with 600 soldiers under his control. And his soldiers are the discontent, the distressed, the angry of the nation that have gathered to the cave of Adullam. David, on his way there, had come to Nob, and there the tabernacle, and Ahimelech the priest. And Ahimelech was nervous because he knew that David worked for the king, for Saul, wondered if there was a problem. David was not honest, said he was on a secret mission. He couldn't tell him what was going on, asked him if there was any food, and the showbread was there that the priests normally eat, and that was given to David and his men. He asked about a weapon. He said, all I have here is the sword of Goliath. He said, that'll do. And Doeg came. Now, Doeg is from the Hebrew verb that means anxiety. Wouldn't you know that? So if there's a Doeg in your life, someone who causes anxiety, maybe you'll appreciate this song. You know, the way I'm describing it seems like it should be a blues song, doesn't it? I know. Doeg, then, as David went to Gath, you know the story, and then when he got to Gath, they said, hey, you're the guy that killed Goliath, and you know, and David acted like he was insane and began to drool on his beard, and they brought him to Achish, king of Gath, and Achish said, I got enough mental cases in my government, you're bringing me somebody else, get him out of here. And David then fled, and God preserved him, and ended up in Adullam, and this army began to gather to him, and then a prophet came and told him to leave that area, that Saul would find him. And as he moved on, Doeg came and told Saul that David had been helped by Ahimelech. Now, here's the interesting thing. This Psalm 52 is about the tongue and about the destruction the tongue can do. James chapter 3 helps us understand this. And the interesting thing about Doeg, what Doeg said to Saul, was not untrue, but it was malicious. To be malicious, something doesn't have to be untrue. He told him a truth, but he told it to him in a malicious way. He told Saul that Ahimelech had helped David, not because he was trying to convey truth, but because he was trying to get Ahimelech in trouble. He was trying to get David in trouble. He spoke a truth, but he spoke it in a malicious way. And you know, we need to be careful because we can do that. And we don't appreciate it when somebody does it about us. And of course, Doeg then went with Saul. They took Ahimelech and his family, and Saul asked his soldiers to fall on the priest's family. They refused because it was a priest's family. And Doeg, the Edomite, then took a sword and hacked in pieces 85 members of Ahimelech's family. He was a ruthless man. And this song talks about that. And again, application, I don't know, some Doeg in your life. Somebody causing anxiety, it's interesting to see what David does with this. Here we go. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? The goodness of God endureth continually. Why are you boasting, Doeg, shooting off your mouth, causing trouble? God's goodness endures continually. Thy tongue deviseth mischiefs, like a sharp razor working deceitfully. You ever known anybody that has a tongue like a sharp razor? Huh? If you know another human being, you do. Unless you're here alone somehow. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness. Selah, think about that. Thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. Now, again, the tongue, very destructive piece of anatomy. James says, you know, consider how a bridle in a horse's mouth turns the entire animal. Consider how a rudder on a huge ship determines the whole direction of the ship. So is the tongue in human nature. It's the smallest member, but it determines so much of what goes on in our lives and the lives of others around us. And it says the tongue is like a forest fire. It's like a spark. You know, you see Smokey the Bear saying, only you can prevent forest fires. Well, the way you prevent the forest fire is by keeping your mouth shut. Because the tongue also is the only other member of your body that comes in its own cage. And if you keep the cage closed, the tongue can't get out and do anything. And I don't know about you, but probably more often than not, I have felt bad or, you know, about something I said that I wish I hadn't said, than I feel bad about something I didn't say that I wish I had said. There may be a time here or there, rarely, when I look back and I regret that I didn't say something when I should have. Most of the time when I look back, I think, I can't believe I said that. Because then you can't reel it back in. And it's worse when someone's doing that with malicious motivation, practicing deceit, even with the ability to speak facts that are true, but with a deceitful motivation. So, Doeg, this song, thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. Now, his fate is predicted in the fifth verse. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place and root thee out of the land of the living. Selah, think about that. You know, David uses some descriptive language here in the Hebrew. He says, God shall destroy thee. That's a Hebrew word. He means he shall beat you down, like turn you into a pancake. He shall take thee away. And when God takes you away, that's far away. He shall pluck thee. And you don't want to be plucked by God. Pluck thee out of thy dwelling. And he shall root thee out of the land. I get a feeling David thinks Doeg's a weed when I read through this. Selah, think about that. The righteous, now the righteous speaking here, David, the righteous also shall see and fear and shall laugh at him, not in a malicious way, but it seems to be at God's justice. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. But I, David, speaking in contrast, am like a green olive tree in the house of God. What a beautiful description. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it. And I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. So David singing his Doeg blues song here in Psalm 52. Psalm 53, if you're familiar with the Psalms, is basically a repeat of Psalm 14, except for a few words. Why do we find this psalm repeated? Well, that's simple, because God wanted to say it twice. I mean, there's no mystery there. Many times in the Bible, God repeats himself, and you and I, as his children, if you have children at home, how many times do you say to your children, what did I say? What did I say? And it's funny when they're little, because you say, did you hear me? Uh-huh. What did I say? You know, they don't know. So God is saying this again to us. There are great truths repeated here. We're in the second book in the Psalms. The first, third, and fifth are Jehovistic. The name of Jehovah is central. In the second book, Elohim is the central name for God. And in this Psalm 14, we have the name Elohim three times and Jehovah four times in this psalm. In this psalm, all seven times it's Elohim, God using that name. And some feel that the psalmist then is repeating to say this is not just for Israel. This is for all people. This is for the nations. This is in relationship to God, not just Jehovah, the God of Israel. So the fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. Take note, in the Old Testament, a fool is not a fool like you have today. Somebody may look at you today and say, you fool. That means one thing today. In the Old Testament, a fool was someone who said, there is no God. If you said that, you were a fool. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Corrupt are they, and have done abominable iniquity. There is none that doeth good. Now, by the way, that's usually the fruit of a society or a people who say that there is no God. You know, it's interesting, some of our folks who had ministered in Siberia, when Russia first began to open up a little, the USSR, and who were witness to some of the crimes that had been committed by folks that were imprisoned there, how unthinkable some of them were in regards to cannibalism and mass murder, and how dark, you know, there's just a dark. It wasn't a lot of robbery and felonies and murder, things that we might see here, but there was very much a much darker side that what had been done, because you have a society that had taught for decades that there was no God. And you say here that with that philosophy, corrupt are they. They have done abominable iniquity. There is none that doeth good. God looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and did seek God. Every one of them is gone back. They are all together become filthy. There is none that doeth good. No, not one. Paul uses this as he builds his argument in Romans. Have the workers of iniquity no knowledge? Who eat up my people as they eat bread, they have not called upon God. There were they in great fear, where no fear was. One of the problems with those who are without a relationship with God, it says that paranoia drives them sometimes. Sometimes they are just paranoid, and when there is no one to chase them, they're running, they're in fear. There were they in great fear where there was no fear. For God hath scattered the bones of him that encampeth against thee. Thou hast put them to shame because God hath despised them. Oh, that the salvation of Israel were come out of Zion, and it will. When God bringeth back the captivity of his people, Jacob shall rejoice and Israel shall be glad. When God bringeth back the captivity of his people. Interesting phrase there. Psalm 102 says, when the Lord shall build up Zion, he shall appear in glory. Here it says, oh, that salvation of Israel would come out of Zion when God bringeth back the captivity of his people. No, these are the days that we live in. If you don't believe me, go home tonight and turn on the news. When God bringeth back the captivity of his people, Jacob shall rejoice and Israel shall be glad. Watch the news. Psalm 54. To the chief musician on Niganoth. Now that is smitings, evidently speaking about a stringed instrument. Maskil. This is number 7 of 14 Maskil psalms, which are psalms of instruction. A psalm of David. When the Ziphims came and said to Saul, doth not David hide himself with us? So before there was a Doeg song about Doeg betraying David, now David's being betrayed by the Ziphites. And you can go back and read about that in 1 Samuel 23. Ziph means refining. Ziph is a place where there was mines, and it means to refine, to burn the dross off. So if there are Ziphites in your life, don't be mad. They're refiners. That's easy for me to say. I'll just give you cheap advice and see if you can struggle through it. But Ziphites, refiners, and they had betrayed David even after he had helped them And I know sometimes you feel like that. You do something for somebody and then you get stabbed in the back. This is a song about Ziphites. So maybe a song you want to memorize. I don't know. Save me, O God. The first three verses, the prayer. The second, four verses, the answer. Save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength. He's calling on the name and the power of God. And again, in the name of God is all that he is in the Old Testament, whether he's Jehovah Jireh, Jehovah Ra, Jehovah Shalom. You follow God's name. He is what his name is. He is the becoming one. He is what we need him to be. Save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength. Hear my prayer, O God, give ear to the words of my mouth, for strangers are risen up against me, and oppressors seek after my soul. They have not set God before them, Selah. Think about that. So he's crying out to God. He wrote this song when the Ziphites were in his life, when the refiners were there. Somebody who you had helped, somebody who's, giving you back dirt for honey. Somebody that you've given good to and you've helped. And what do you get back from it? You get what you don't deserve. And then you're thinking, I'd like to strangle this guy. I'll get you out back of the church. I'll slug you and nobody will believe. They'll believe me. They won't believe you. And, and no, God's saying, no, that's not. I want you to be like the Lord. No, I don't. And David, remarkably in this, doesn't slaughter the Ziphites. He doesn't do any of that. In fact, it tells us in 1 Samuel 23 that he ends up in this whole process, interestingly, if I remember here, at Selah Hamath Lakoth, which is the rock of divisions. David had come to that place, and what divides those who have no hope and those who have hope is the rock. There's a rock that divides. And David says here, hear my prayer, O God, give ear to my words, words of my mouth. Strangers are risen up against me, oppressors seek after my soul. They have not set God before them. That's the rock that divides. And that's where David was at the end of this incident with the Ziphites at Selah Hamalakoth, at the rock that divides. Behold, God is my helper. Now that's the good news when any Ziphite is hassling you. That kind of negates any Ziphite effort. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul. Jonathan had come and warned David and said, I know you're going to take the throne and I'll be right beside you. And he shall reward evil unto mine enemies and cut them off in truth. I will freely sacrifice unto thee. I will praise thy name, O Lord, for it is good. Now think of this. This is a 20-year-old, 600 vagabonds in his army, being betrayed, being stabbed in the back. He sits down with his guitar and he writes this song, I will freely sacrifice unto thee, I will praise thy name, O Lord, for it is good. This is in the midst of betrayal. He's a remarkable young kid. For he hath delivered me out of all trouble, and mine eye hath seen his desire upon mine enemies. Psalm 55, to the chief musician, Oniganoth. Striking of the strings, Maskil, a psalm of instruction again. This is of David. And this is a psalm of betrayal. A psalm of dealing with a traitor. In verses 12 to 14 and 20 and 21, Ahithophel is being spoken of here. Absalom may be hinted at. This is a time when David was fleeing. Absalom had taken the throne. When Absalom took the throne, one of David's best friends, his best counselor, a man named Ahithophel, turned against David and took sides with Absalom. No doubt the root of that bitterness in the life of Ahithophel was that he had a granddaughter named Bathsheba. And he knew that David had taken her in adultery and killed her husband. And yet God was not done with David. And Ahithophel ends up in the line of traitors in the Bible. His name is in line with Delilah and Saul and Absalom and Jezebel and Haman and Judas. Treachery is a thing that God frowns on at every level, I believe. The first 8 verses, David speaks of his distress in relationship to these things. Verses 9 to 15, he speaks of his indignation in regards to these things. And verses 16 to 23, he speaks of his confidence in regards to these things. Give ear to my prayer, O God. Hide not thyself from my supplication. Attend unto me and hear me. I mourn in my complaint and I make a noise. Now, look, again, imagine the situation that David's in. David has had to leave Jerusalem. Absalom has taken his father's concubines and had sex with them openly on the roof to humiliate his own father. Absalom is trying to kill his father. There are those that are mocking David as he is leaving Jerusalem, and Joab says, let me kill them, and David says, nah. You know, when I sinned, Nathan said, a curse would come upon my house, the sword would not depart, that my wives would be taken in the open. He said, God's raised him up to do this. Somehow, David, in a very remarkable way, is bending under the hand of God in unthinkable circumstances. He's an older man now. He's over 50 years old in the Psalm. Imagine your own son having a contract on your life. Imagine your best friend turning to help set a snare for your feet. You know, we sit here and read through this. This is the depths. If you can imagine, I can't imagine and hope I never live through anything this painful. But what a picture of David's heart in all of this. You know, again, it's interesting because David, you know, he sins. He sowed the seeds of that sin. God had said in Deuteronomy chapter 14, when you come into the land that I'm going to give you and you choose from among your brethren a man to be king, he shall not be like the kings from the nations around you. I don't want him to multiply wives. I don't want him to go back to Egypt for horses. And I don't want him to store up gold and silver to himself. That's lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. I want him to write a copy of this book. And I want him to meditate it in every day and every night, that his heart would not be lifted up above his brethren. He's supposed to realize he's not really the king, that God is the king, and he's no different from anyone else in Israel, except that God has put his grace on his life. And that's what God wanted from a king. David made a mistake. He didn't multiply wives, but he started to take them. We get count of about 6 concubines by the time the thing happens with Bathsheba. And slowly, David was slowly stepping over the line that God had set. Not the way Solomon would with 700 wives and 300 concubines. Maybe David didn't consider 6 multiplying. I don't know. I guarantee you 2 wives is multiplying. David had sown the seeds. He fell into adultery. He committed murder. He was never the king after the fact that he was before that act. Because when Joab looked at him, he knew that he had sent him to kill Uriah. Because he could never be stern in his pronouncements after that. When his own son Amnon raped his sister Tamar, David could not take the stand as a father that he should have taken, because David had taken Bathsheba and committed adultery, which is a capital crime in Israel. And David was then impotent in that he should have stepped forward and condemned Amnon, and that put Absalom into a rage because Tamar was his sister from the same mother. He had all those moms in the house. And then Absalom would kill Amnon. And what could David say to Absalom for killing Amnon, because he had killed Uriah? And David, you know, had undermined himself. And he was never the father or the king that he would have been if he had continued walking with the Lord. But I am convinced that he was a much greater psalmist. He drew near to God broken and poured out his heart before the Lord. And in a song like this, when 10,000 other men would have been bitter and vengeful, David said, no, let that man yell. Let him scream at me. God's raised him up to do it. And he has given us some of the most remarkable pictures of God's grace and love in the Old Testament. Give ear to my prayer, O God. Hide not thyself from my supplication. Attend unto me. Hear me. I mourn in my complaint and I make a noise. Because of the voice of the enemy, because of the oppression of the wicked, for they cast iniquity upon me, and in wrath they hate me. My heart is sore pained within me, and oh, I can imagine. And the terrors of death are fallen upon me. Some feel that David was in illness at this point in his life. Fearfulness and trembling are come upon me, and horror hath overwhelmed me. And I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove, for then would I fly away and be at rest. Ever said that to yourself? You probably said, I need Club Med. That's the same thing. You know, you're in the most horrendous, painful, difficult circumstance in your life. You think, oh man, I would just like to bail out. Get me in the car, fill up the tank, I'm headed for Montana. You know. See you in Banff. I'm moving to Lake Louise. Leave me alone. Oh, that I had wings like a dove. For then would I fly away and be at rest. Now, just a note, not that most of you will really care. And again, I mentioned that we only remember 7 to 8% of what we hear. So you'll probably forget this anyway. I won't mind because I'll forget that you forgot. But you can get the tapes and that helps remember. But you know, this is the Word of God. The Holy Spirit sows these things in our hearts, so we're not subject to those statistics. Anyway, but look at Psalm 56, the introduction there. One of the problems we have in the Psalms today is sometimes the postscript to a psalm has been attached to the introduction to the next psalm. You'll see the next psalm there, 56. It says, to the chief musician upon Jonath Elam Rechokim. You knew that. What that means, Jonath Elam Rechokim, is the silent dove afar off, or the dove of the distant terebinths. And no doubt this is a postscript to this psalm of David saying, I wish I was like a distant dove in the terebinth trees. And then in Psalm 56, beginning at Michtam of David, we have the introduction to the next psalm. So that's, scholars are divided. Sometimes it becomes very obvious that when there's a long introduction, that some of it has little to do with the psalm we're about to enter into and is very much more relative to the psalm before. And this is one of those places. So David will end this psalm by saying to the chief musician, which he says in the beginning, he said, upon Jonach Elam Rechokim, against, you know, in regards to the dove and the distant terebinth trees, he says here in all of his pain, I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove, for I would fly away and be at rest. Lo, then would I wander far off and remain in the wilderness. Selah, think about that, and how David wants to think about that, just being somewhere in the wilderness. I like David, you know, break the teeth of the wicked. I can get right there in that space, you know. I can get right in the space, man, I'd like to be in the wilderness. You know, just give me a shotgun, a fishing rod, a wood stove, a mountain and a lake, and leave me alone for 50 years. You know, I can dig that. I can understand right where that is. During the millennium, God's going to let me live somewhere like that. I'll be the mayor in a two-man town. Me and my buddy. Whoever that is, I don't know. Okay, 8. I would hasten my escape from the windy storm and the tempest. And that's how David sees what's going on. Now, he asked God, not taking things into his own hands, destroy, O Lord, divide their tongues. For I have seen violence and strife in the city. Day and night they go about upon the walls thereof. Mischief also and sorrow are in the midst of it. Wickedness is in the midst thereof. Deceit and guile depart not from their from her streets. David, knowing what a deceitful and dangerous place Jerusalem had come, and then speaking of Ahithophel, for it was not an enemy that reproached me. Then I could have borne it. Neither was it he that hated me, that did magnify himself against me. Then I would have hid myself from him, but it was thou, a man, mine equal, my guide, mine acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked unto the house of God in company. That's a painful betrayal. And I know some of you here have been betrayed by husband or wife or best friend or son or daughter or parent. David, being honest, speaking in his pain, putting it before the Lord. What a tremendous man. Let death seize upon them, let them go down quick into hell, for wickedness is in their dwellings and among them. As for me, speaking of his confidence now, I will call upon God, and the Lord will save me. Evening and morning and at noon will I pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. David's weapon in all of this, he chose to be prayer, not to take up the sword, though he was a great warrior. He hath delivered my soul in peace from the battle that was against me. You know, God, you've always been faithful. For there were many with me. God shall hear and afflict them, even he that abideth of old, the Lord, the faithful one, Selah. Think about that. Because they have no changes, therefore they fear not God. They have no changes. They have no problems in their life. There's no difficulties interrupting them. Because there's no problems in their lives, they fear not God. And then 20 and 21, he hath put forth his hands against such as be at peace with him. He hath broken his covenant, no doubt looking to Ahithophel again. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, that's soft, yet were they drawn swords. Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. Great verse. Underline it in your Bible. Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7. Tell us the same thing in the New Testament. Casting all of our cares upon him, with prayer and supplication and so forth. And the peace of God will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Great advice from a man who's been through a very deep valley. Cast thy burden upon the Lord. He shall sustain thee. Turning your cares into prayers. It should be a rule in our lives to turn our cares into prayers. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. Again, think of the agony of David's not bitter. David's not seething. You know, some Christians, some believers would say, that's it, I've had it. You know, my son wants to kill me, my best friends, this is what I get. Some Christians would be out in a bar. They'd be out getting stoned. They'd be throwing restraint to the wind. They'd be turning away from God. It's remarkable to see David here abiding, bending under what has come his way, knowing that he is reaping some of what he has sown, but trusting in God's goodness. Cast thy burden upon the Lord, he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. But thou, O God, shalt bring them down into the pit of destruction. Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. Now, isn't it interesting that it was a short time after this that Ahithophel would commit suicide, one of the few suicides in the Bible, and Absalom would be killed in battle within a short time. Neither one of those men lived out half their days. Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days, but I will trust in the Lord. Okay, Psalm 56, you know now that we have come to Jonath, Elam, Rechokim, and you all remember that is not relative to Psalm 56. You can go tell people that and impress them. If that's in the 7 to 8% of what you remember from this evening. Okay, the introduction here is Mikdam of David when the Philistines took him in Gath. Mikdam is a golden psalm. It seems to indicate this was something special to the heart of David. This is when the Philistines took him in Gath. Remember, we talked about that earlier when he fled. You know, and David realizes what a mess he's in. He comes to Gath, fleeing from Saul. What he had, and he wasn't honest with Ahimelech and Nob, the priest. He's making up stories to get out of the difficulty that he's in. And a very interesting process if we trace David through those days, because Saul had turned on him. He had great position, great success. He had killed Goliath, 17 years old. He was raised up in Saul's army, given a very remarkable place in the kingdom. And as a young man, he finds himself in betrayal. Saul's trying to kill him. He flees, and then his wife puts an idol in the bed. And that's not saying much for what David let go on in his house. But David then had to get out of the home and leave his wife, and then he went to Samuel, and he was chased there, and he had to leave his mentor. God didn't want any man to counsel David in a difficult time. He went to Jonathan, and he had to leave his best friend behind. And it was a time in David's life when God had knocked every prop out from under his life. Every human spring, every stream that would flow from humanity to David, God had him in the crucible. God was refining him. God was turning him into the king that he was anointed to be. He was anointed to be king, and he wouldn't be king for many, many, many years after that. And God was turning him into the king he was anointed to be and refining him. So all of those props knocked away. You know, isn't it interesting? There are times in our lives when God would not have a counselor to help us. Strips them away. There are times when God wants us on our knees looking to him, because the lesson that is to be learned in the privacy of your own relationship with Jesus Christ. And David is faltering. He comes to Nob. He is dishonest with Ahimelech. Do you have any food? He eats the showbread. Do you have a weapon here? He says, well, I got the sword of Goliath. David says, great, that'll help me. Well, wait a minute. It didn't help the guy you put a stone in his forehead. You know, all you needed was a sling before. Now you need the sword of Goliath. And how big was it? You imagine David, 20 years old, running with this big giant sword dragging behind him. If he put it in his belt, it would be hanging out way behind him. And where does he go? He goes to Gath. That's where Goliath was from. And he must, in the process, realize, what in the world have I done? I've lost all my dignity. Here I am in enemy territory with Goliath's sword, and everybody in Gath looking at me saying, we know you. Wait a minute. You're the guy who wrote that hit record, Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his ten thousands. We know that record. And then he starts to dribble and let spit run down his beard and scratch on the doors. You know, and look where, you know, you look where he's come to. He's lost all dignity. And no doubt he's not pulling out his guitar and his pen, writing the song right in the middle of that while he's drooling. No doubt after that, as he comes to Adullam and God has delivered him, he picks up his harp again for the first time, no doubt in many months, maybe in several years, and begins to worship God again. And this psalm takes this introduction, the Mikdam, a golden psalm, something that was very important to David. Let's look at it, because there are definitely some golden things in it for us today, some treasure. Be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He, fighting daily, oppresseth me. Lord, I can't get a break here. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up. For they be many that fight against me, O Thou Most High. And what time I am afraid, I will trust in Thee. 20-year-old writing this. In the days that I'm afraid, Lord, I will trust in You. In God, I will praise His Word. In God, have I put my trust? They put a semicolon there. There's some kind of a pause, a thought. In God, I will praise His word. In God, I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. Every day they rest my words. They twist my words. Ever have somebody do that to you? That you say something and they misquote you, or they take parts of what you say. You know, I remember years ago when we were on Good Morning America, you know, in the old building, when Time Magazine came out and they took the picture, and we were Time Magazine, and everybody was calling, oh, we want to come, we want to see their service. So Good Morning America is there. And they were filming on Sunday morning, and I was saying something about Leviticus. We may have been in Leviticus, I don't remember, but I was saying, you know how Leviticus is this boring book and nobody liked to read it. Because what I was going to make a point was how remarkable the passage was that we were and how beautiful it was. Well, of course, they edited that, and when it ran on TV, there I am saying, oh, you know what a boring, dumb book Leviticus is, you know. And, you know, I can relate to David there. Every day they rest my words, they wrestle them around. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather themselves together. They hide themselves. They mark my steps. They watch where I go. They have me under surveillance when they wait for my soul. Shall they escape by iniquity? He's saying to God. In thine anger, cast down the people, O God. Now, so personal and so beautiful. Thou tellest my wanderings. A 20-year-old. Lord, you know all my steps. You know the paths of my life. A 20-year-old. Thou tellest my wanderings. Put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not written in thy book? Lord, you know all of the steps of my life. Here I've wandered into this mess in Gath, in enemy territory. Lord, you know all of my wanderings. All of my tears, every one of them. There's not a tear that rolls down your face that God doesn't know about. That's what it says here. There's not a hair. It says even the very hairs of your head are numbered. Some of you making that way easier for God than others. Now look, that's not true, and I'll tell you why, okay, so that everybody can feel good about that. It says, even the very hairs of our head have a number assigned to them, which means that the process is just as complicated for somebody who's bald as it is for somebody who's hairy. Because when you lose a hair, what it's saying is God says, oh, there goes number 1,243 that just fell out. What it's saying is even the very hairs of your head are numbered. Every one of them has a number on it. God knows each hair separately. So even if you're bald, He knows which hairs are gone and which hairs are left. It's still complicated. So feel good about that. It's cooler in the summer, too. Thou tellest my wanderings. You know, come on. Thou tellest my wanderings. Put thou my tears into thy bottle. He knows the hairs of our head. It says here He knows every tear that we shed. When you're alone somewhere, you think nobody cares, nobody watches. David is in the most horrendous of circumstances. 20 years old, and this is flowing forth from his heart. That God knows every tear you shed. You think nobody cares. Sometimes that's why the tear is running down your cheek. David says, put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not written in thy book? Is there one of them that is not recorded individually? No, not a single one. God knows every one. He knows our path. He knows our wanderings. He knows our course in life. And He knows in the course of our lives each day that will bring forth a broken heart, that will cause us to shed a tear. And every one of those tears are kept and stored. Some of us will have swimming pools. Some of us will have vials. But some of us are learning to cry. Some of us are learning not to cry. We're all being conformed in the image of likeness of Christ. We're all coming to the same image. Jesus wept. the tomb of Lazarus. He wept over Jerusalem. Jesus wept. So some of us who have never wept, we've been hard-boiled eggs our whole life, we're learning to weep. Some of us who blubber about everything are learning to have a little self-control, bring things into perspective. But our tears, they're saved. They're written in a book. When I cry unto thee, then shall mine enemies turn back. This I know, for God is for me. That, I think, was one of the driving forces of David's life. I mean, look, he had killed a bear. He had taken a lion at 17 years old, or less. He was 17 when Samuel anointed him. So before that, was he 16 or 15? Maybe he was 4 and he didn't have any sense. I don't know. But he took a lion by the beard and slew him with what he had in his other hand. When you take a lion by the beard, what do you want in your other hand? That's the question. I want a 45 in the other. I know David didn't have one of those. He slew a lion and a bear, and he slew a giant. And he had great victory over the Philistines. And even as a young man, he could say, Lord, I'll call upon you to preserve me, because I know this. I know this. God is for me. And you need to know that. We need to grow in grace and in the knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. In the most difficult times, we need to know that God is for us, not against us. He's not getting us. He's getting me. That's why things are so tough. He's not getting you. He already got somebody in your place 2,000 years ago on a cross. Jesus already got it. What you deserve to get, somebody's already got. That's the good news. Trouble is, this is earth. That's heaven. And there are tears, and there are difficulties. But God knows our wanderings. All of our tears He saves. They're all recorded. When we cry unto the Lord, He turns back our enemies. We know this because He's for us. In God will I praise His word. Notice now, and in the Lord, Yahweh, will I praise His word. In God have I put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do unto me. Thy vows are upon me, O God. I will render praises to thee. Now, thy vows are upon me. Evidently what he's talking about, and I think it's 63. Yeah. I will go into thy house with burnt offerings. I will pay thee my vows, which my lips have uttered and my mouth hath spoken when I was in trouble. So David says here in Psalm 56, which was written in light of his trouble in Gath, he says, thy vows are upon me, O God. I will render praises unto thee. He evidently, when he was in Gath, and he's dragging Goliath's sword through the street, and the people start to say, we know you, you're David. Now, understand this. The first person we meet in the Bible named David is David. Everybody's named David today. There was only one guy named David then. It wasn't a common name. David. He's the first one that we meet in Scripture. They say, we know you, David. No, that's not who I am. I'm Goliath. Look, here's my sword. You know, I mean, he's in a mess in Gath, and he's making vows like you and I do. That's when we make our vows. Lord, if you get me out of this, I promise I'll be in church every Sunday morning. If you get me out of this mess, God, I'll read your word every day. If you get me out of this, I'll kiss my aunt. She's really mean, but I'll go up and I'll kiss her and I'll be nice to her this Easter, you know. Lord, if you'll get me out of this, you know, so David now in the cave of Adullam, you know, he must have been saying, oh, Lord, get me out of this one. Okay, I'll dribble on my beard. I'll scratch on a wall. I'll act like an idiot, but get me out of this and I'll praise you every day for the rest of my life. And he's saying that here. Thy vows are upon me, O God. I will render praises unto thee. No doubt he had vowed that he would worship God the rest of his life. For thou hast delivered my soul from death. Wilt not thou deliver my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the land of the living.